Cycle Heaven with Rob Staton on BBC Radio Sheffield.
Good evening, we're back with Cycle Heaven tonight. We're here every single night this week in the run-up to the Tour de France coming to South Yorkshire. On tonight's show, we bring you exclusive interviews on the story of Lance Armstrong, the man who came back from cancer to win 7 Tour de France titles and then lost them all. He was exposed as a central figure in the most sophisticated, professionalised and successful doping programme that sport has ever seen. This is the story of the greatest fraud in sporting history. We'll hear from the former teammate in his first interview since Armstrong was stripped of his Tour de France titles.
The one thing I will say, he is and was definitely the best athlete out there.
Why did he take so many drugs then? Couldn't he have changed the sport?
Yeah, it's getting everyone else to do it, isn't it? That's the trouble. I would say it's definitely a fair playing field, and the best rider still won.
We'll speak to the journalist who exposed Armstrong was doping while other reporters were duped by the American.
He got away with it because it suited people to have an American who had recovered from life-threatening cancer winning the Tour de France. He was like Tiger Woods on a bike.
We've also got an interview with the man who was commissioned by Lance Armstrong to make a behind-the-scenes film about his comeback from retirement at the 2009 Tour. He and Oprah Winfrey are the only people to have interviewed Armstrong since he was exposed as a serial cheat.
What I really didn't reckon with was the idea that I was being used as a kind of cover story. And by following him on the 2009 Tour, where he was going to prove to everybody that he rode clean, it was in some larger way meant to further legitimate his past tour wins. So I was part of a cover-up or a con, and that's what I resented.
And we've interviewed one of the biggest names in cycling, 3 times winner of the Tour de France, Greg LeMond, on how his life changed because he dared to question Lance Armstrong.
10 years that our family's been under attack. You know, he worked with very powerful people, and they did everything they could to destroy anybody, but me in particular.
It's a show you won't want to miss tonight. The Lance Armstrong story. This is Cycle Heaven on BBC Radio Sheffield.
Cycle Heaven on BBC Radio Sheffield.
Rob Staton with you for Cycle Heaven again tonight. Our Tour de France reporter Mark Ansell is also in the studio this evening and we'll speak to him in a moment. But first, let's get into some breaking news. And an application has been made to the UCI for a new world-class professional cycle race in Yorkshire. If approved by the world's governing body, the provisionally titled Tour of Yorkshire is going to be a 3-day race. And it is going to run, the first event is going to run from the 1st to the 3rd of May 2015. Gary Verity, the chief executive of Welcome to Yorkshire, has said in a statement, "I'm delighted to be able to announce this exciting new race for Yorkshire. Our county is a new cycling heartland of Europe, and we look forward to welcoming back some of the world's best riders in Yorkshire in less than 12 months' time." We'll have more of this in Friday's Cycle Heaven, but it appears the Tour of Yorkshire is on the way next year, and I'm sure that's something people want to get in touch about with Cycle Heaven on Friday's show. Let's start tonight, though, with a very general look at doping at the Tour de France. I've been speaking with the BBC's Tour de France correspondent, Matt Slater, and I started by asking him, why is the Tour so closely associated with doping?
Well, I think the simple answer is that cycling is a little bit unlucky in that the drugs do work. It's an endurance sport where the, if you like, the skill level is relatively less important. And the drugs are just very effective. And right from the beginning of the sport, right from the beginning of the professional sport, back to the 1900s when the Tour de France started, the riders were already using stimulants and painkillers just to endure the event, really. The rigours of the event, it's always been a very, very tough event. So there's always been this culture of doping. And in fact, the famous Italian champion Fausto Coppi was once asked if he ever doped, and he said, this is in the 50s, he said, only when is absolutely necessary. And the question came back, well, how often is that? And he said, most of the time. And there are similar quotes I could give you from very famous champions who were almost kind of glib about it. Now, what changed, I think, is that the famous death of Tommy Simpson, the British rider, probably our first really, truly great British rider in terms of kind of continental Europe level. He famously rode himself to death on Mont Ventoux in the 1967 Tour. It was a truly shocking moment that was caught on camera. And he was fueled by amphetamines. Now, that really should, I think, have given the sport a bit of a shock. What it did was it drove doping underground. They stopped joking about it. They carried on taking amphetamines. Until we got to the 90s, really, when The drugs changed. They got even more effective. And what we had then was almost an arms race, where if you weren't willing to dope, if you weren't willing to manipulate your blood, you'd be outgunned. And I think that's the culture that created things like the Lance Armstrong affair. The sport was always hard. There was a culture of doping, and the drugs worked.
You've touched on Lance Armstrong there, and you know that is who people think of right now, you know, when they think of drug cheating, because it was such a high-profile case. Can you just explain the way in which Lance Armstrong cheated?
Yes, well, as I mentioned, we got to this period in the 90s where the drugs in the peloton were changing. They were going, if you like, they were changing from being kind of stimulants, painkillers, steroids as well, but very much about aiding recovery, to genuine performance-enhancing drugs, you know, classic doping. Now, cycling is really all about energy. It's about how you use red blood cells. That's the part of your blood that carries oxygen around. When you exercise, your red blood cell count is depleted. So if you can artificially boost that by either re-injecting blood that you'd banked earlier when you were at a rested state, or by stimulating the growth of red blood cells, and in fact, they actually did a bit of both, you have an advantage. You can maintain those high levels of red blood cell, oxygen-rich red blood cells. What Lance Armstrong started to do, to be honest, was already happening. He entered the sport in the mid-90s when the big drug was EPO, which is used by people that are on kidney dialysis, people that are having real problems creating red blood cells. It was that drug that really changed the sport. He came away from his break when he got over cancer and just decided, you know what, the drugs we were taking before aren't good enough. And he got very organised. I think that's the key thing about the Lance Armstrong story. His team systematically doped. They had the best dodgy doctors and they just got very, very organised.
I suppose what many people would ask, Matt, is how on earth could he get away with it for so long, having been so successful whilst doing this? How did he manage to get away with it?
I think there are a few things to say here. The first is that we're all led to believe that the anti-doping regime, the testers, are on top of things. And whenever we come to a big event, be it an Olympics or a World Cup, we always hear how many tests they're going to do. And we think, well, that's great. The bottom line is drug testing is actually a really ineffective tool here. The really big drugs busts have not come from drugs tests. Very rarely do we get a Ben Johnson moment where someone fails a drugs test. Lance Armstrong, Barry Bonds, the Belco story, Operation Puerto, which was a huge scandal involving cyclists and athletes in Spain, Marion Jones. These famous, famous cases are often brought down by old-fashioned police work or witness testimonies. So that's the first thing. Drugs tests aren't that great. They just aren't. The people that want to cheat are always one step ahead. They're using a new drug that can't be detected yet, or they're using very small doses. It's called microdosing, where you don't use enough. You use it little and often, not enough to trigger the test. So that's the first thing. Now, I think the other thing is, did cycling really want to catch people back then? I think that's the charge that is laid at the authorities. Lance Armstrong, the year he won his first tour, 1999, was a key tour. It was supposed to be the tour of redemption. The previous tour had been ruined by a massive drugs bust where police had found lots and lots of drugs in cars. You know, again, nothing to do with drugs testing. So the Lance Armstrong story, this epic American hero who'd beaten cancer, was taking the sport to a new audience. Did they really want to catch him?
Do you think the drug taking is still happening now at the Tour de France?
I don't think we'll ever eradicate doping, and I think it's impossible to pretend that we will. I think it's much, much cleaner. I think we're going through probably the cleanest phase in cycling's history. I think if you think about Lance Armstrong, he was brought down by the witness testimonies of his teammates. They'd had enough of the lies. When they took those wins from Lance Armstrong, they didn't reallocate them. An entire generation was damned. So I think cycling was ready to change. I'll also say that the testing has got better. And I think the key weapon here is the biological passport. You no longer now test for the substance, the needle in the haystack. You test for the changes that that substance will do to your body. So an athlete will start off with a full MOT, so we know their blood values, we know what normal is for them, and we look for changes to normal. Now, cycling has championed this, and other sports have copied. And I spoke to Chris Froome about this a few weeks ago, and he pointed out just how much cycling has changed and just how often he's tested.
It would be great for people to understand just the level of testing we are exposed to know that 365 days a year, the authorities know where we're sleeping on a daily basis so that they can test us 24 hours a day, anytime they want, anywhere, And if we're not where we say we are, then we get penalised for it. And that's something that's a huge part of the sport that's changed since Lance's era and the guys, obviously, who are racing with Lance.
So as Chris Froome pointed out, they are tested an awful lot. So at the Tour de France last year alone, he's probably tested 15 times because he was the man in yellow. Every day the man in yellow gets tested. I think cycling is cleaner than it ever has been before. I think we can believe what we're seeing. Guys like Bradley Wiggins would never have won the Tour 10, 15 years ago. The average speeds have come down. But we should just stop pretending that we will ever have completely clean sport.
Interesting thoughts there from the BBC's Tour de France correspondent Matt Slater. This is Cycle Heaven on BBC Radio Sheffield. Rob Staton with you live in the studio for Cycle Heaven. And we're going to get back on to Lance Armstrong in a moment. But first, a topical piece of breaking news today. Daryl Impey, who became the first South African to wear the yellow jersey in Tour de France history last year, has failed a drugs test, it's been revealed today. Impey tested positive for the banned substance propenicid, I think it's pronounced, at the South African Championships in February. In a statement on his personal website, he says, "I'm extremely distressed by the finding, as I have always raced clean throughout my career." He's been suspended by his team. He's added, "I remain confident I'll be vindicated and proven innocent of any wrongdoing. Every result I've achieved to date has been because of hard work and dedication on my part." Well, our Tour de France reporter on BBC Radio Sheffield is Mark Ansell. And Mark, it's pretty much a coincidence, isn't it, that on the day that we're talking about doping in Le Tour, a story like this breaks?
Yeah, it is a coincidence and an unhappy one. Daryl Impey will be known to many because he won stage 6 of last year's Tour de France from Aix-en-Provence to Montpellier. And he wore the jersey for 2 days. He's known to be a friend of Chris Froome and a former teammate. Froome even refers to him as a friend in his recent autobiography. So this has shocked the cycling world. Again, cycling associated with doping.
He's protesting his innocence here, isn't he, Daryl Impey? But as you mentioned there, it's brought this to the fore. You know, people are going to be talking about doping in the Tour de France again rather than, you know, potentially the fact that the race is just going to begin and it's going to be in this country.
That's right. I mean, it's not what the organisers of the Tour, the ASO, or anyone associated with cycling wanted. This is quite a big name in cycling that's not going to be riding the Tour for all the wrong reasons.
If you want to get in touch with the show tonight, feel free. You can do. You can text in 81333, start your message with Sheffield. You can give Jamie a call at 0114 279 6699. He'll pass on your messages to us tonight. And you can send your tweets as well to BBC Sheffield. We're going to bring you an interview with Jamie Burrow next. Obviously, Mark with me in the studio here. Mark, what can you tell us about Jamie? Because he's not the most familiar name, is he?
No, but back in the 90s, he was a real up-and-coming cycling British talent. Now, that he was the top under-3 rider in the world, in fact, so much so that he was signed up by Lance Armstrong's US Postal Service team in 1999. And that was the year that Armstrong's first Tour de France win. Jamie was what's known as a domestique, a rider for Lance, i.e. he was a support rider who slogs his guts out for the team and hopes that Armstrong will get through first. And Jamie Burrow is based now in Italy, but works as brand manager at Planet X, the Sheffield bike makers. And I caught up with Jamie at their factory in Rotherham. He told me what it was like being Lance Armstrong's teammate back in 1999, the first year he won the Tour de France.
Well, it was at the beginning of his tour run. Obviously, he wasn't such... I wouldn't say he was a household celebrity in the beginning. He was known within the cycling world. But it wasn't kind of like it wasn't a global success, not in the beginning. And you could see that changing overnight, literally as each tour he won went on. He's become more and more famous and just known by everybody, really. Little things you notice, like when you're around a hotel, you've got other sort of top bike riders, team leaders, and they're just real down-to-earth guys. Everyone has a giggle around the table and that's it. Whereas there you were sitting with the boss. It was like sitting with sort of the CEO. And it was, I'd say, the first businessman to come into cycling. You're a member of a team, but you're an employee of a company, and you're there to do a job. And if someone else can do that job better than you, for less or the same money, then that's it. They get the job, you don't. It's as simple as that.
What was your relationship like with him?
Rider and boss. Everyone else in the Tour de France team, I was in part of the Tour team, they're all older guys with experience, were brought in, especially to defend the Tour title. was I was brought in as to learn the trade and help out, but also be a future tour contender myself.
What happened then? What happened with you? Because obviously you were told then that you would be a future contender.
Well, I had a lot of injury, which obviously didn't help things. But also, I think as things progressed for him and for the team, and the Tour de France became the be-all and end-all of the season, no other results for the rest of the year counted at all. And it meant there was no space for anyone with personal goals.
What was it like for you to be in a team where, looking back now, obviously drug taking was a massive part of it? Being part of the team meant presumably you had to do it, right?
No, because you don't know everything what's going on. It's all behind closed doors.
Oh, so you didn't know that there was drug taking going on at US Postal when you were a member of that team?
No, you know that there is. You know that within the sport it's going on, and you know that all the top guys are probably using the same substances.
Okay, so did you suspect that Lance Armstrong was using drugs and other members of that team?
Did I suspect it? The one thing I will say, he is and was definitely the best athlete out there.
Why did he take so many drugs then? Couldn't he have changed the sport?
Yeah, it's getting everyone else to do it, isn't it? That's the trouble. I would say it was definitely a fair playing field. And the best fighter still won. And he was the most professional. Like, after everything that's now come out, having been there, the thing that kind of alarms me the most is the fact of him coming across as a bit of a bully. But as an athlete and a cheat, I see it a bit differently because I think it was a fair playing field. I don't know how much he worked, and I would definitely say he was the most professional athlete and probably the most professional person I've ever met.
But he was a cheat.
Yeah. I mean, he went against the rules that are on the paper, but if you're on a fair playing field at the time, then everyone's a cheat. From everything that's come, he's lost his seven Tour de France titles, but they've not gone and looked at second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, and down as far as you want to go.
You think they'd find drugs there as well?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Were you forced to take, or were you asked to take drugs, or were you taking drugs?
No, not at all. It was classed as the most organised doping circle within a team. Yeah, I was there, and I didn't know anything about it. I was never told directly about it. You can assume what might be going on, but I was never told, never offered, never asked.
Well, why wouldn't you be taking it if he's taking it? Why would some of the team be doping and others not?
Down to who was actually going to be riding the Tour de France. And also, I was young. That could have been a difference. We did a lot of testing before going into the team, and it was, they went over and over again. The sport is cleaning up, things are changing, and, you know, we want people that are going to be riding clean. That's what I was told.
But you knew that that wasn't the case? You knew that people were doping?
You know there's doping within the sport, yeah. There is, and there always will be. There's going to be different substances and different methods. But
you think there's still doping going on at the Tour de France at the minute?
Yeah, for sure.
And what proportion of riders would you say?
I think the major tours, Tour, Giro, Vuelta, are probably, I think they're probably the cleanest races on the calendar now, just because they're the most tested in the run-up to, during, you know, and after. So I can't say ever been clean, but I think the Tour's probably the cleanest race out there now. And it's definitely a much fairer playing field. So before, I would say it was a level playing field between the top guys, as in the leaders, the guys that were actually paid to try and win the Tour de France. You know, there might have been domestics that weren't on the same kind of programme just because of finances or whatever. Yet now, I would say, across the whole field of the Tour de France, it's probably cleanest it's ever been.
Looking back then, seven Tour de France titles, as you said, he's been scratched from history. There's no winner of the Tour de France on those years that Lance Armstrong won. Do you think he's been scapegoated unfairly?
Yes, because, I say, as you say, he did cheat, but he wasn't the only one, that's for sure. But, I mean, I can understand the full story behind it. If someone denies it for so long, it doesn't come across very well, does it?
And in the whole career that you had, did you ever dope?
No.
You must begrudge other people, then, that have succeeded, who have doped and then succeeded, no?
That's a question a lot of people have said. A lot of people have asked me. And a lot of people have said, you must feel really good because you had a reasonable career and you know where you should have been if you'd have joined in, but you should be proud, like, of what you've done. But at the same time, I can also look at it as, yeah, but there's guys that in 10 years of a career have set themselves up for the rest of their lives. At the end of the day, we all work to pay a mortgage, set ourselves up, set our families up for the future. And, you know, the guys in 10 years of a career can then set themselves up for the rest of their lives, you know, whereas obviously I haven't got that opportunity. You know, so there's times where you could easily say, was I the smart one? for not doing it, or was it a smart one? You know, how does it work? It's definitely an unanswered question, really.
What's your sort of overall feeling about the man himself, Lance Armstrong? You obviously rode with him, you knew him very well. What are your feelings about the man himself?
Well, he's definitely had to take a few steps backwards, isn't he? Because, I mean, I'm convinced he was heading towards a career in politics before this came out. Mm. And I said that even back in 2000.
A lot of people thought he would stand to be governor of Texas.
I even said it, like, literally back in 2000, 2001. I mean, saying to a friend, it wouldn't surprise me if this guy in the future even runs for president. Mm. Because if you look at sort of the stereotypical American at the time, if you had the cancer survivor, 7 times Tour de France winner, the Cancer Foundation, and obviously by the time he would have stopped, and then the kind of, say, your average age to go into that kind of environment probably would have passed another 10 years. He would have been a global name before you even started. I mean, you look now, how many candidates for presidency, no one knows who they are before they actually come forward, do they? This guy would have been like, he's the perfect man. You know, he's the hero, he's the survivor, he's the winner, he's the battler. That's never going to happen now. That's all. That's completely changed. I think a lot of the cancer survivors that he helped and encouraged, you know, he still did that. And I think a lot of them still see him as, for his character for that. You know, I think they probably bypassed the whole doping thing. I mean, I think us as bike riders, we concentrate completely on the doping aspect of things. I would think that, you know, the millions of cancer survivors, they might have a slightly different opinion.
That's Jamie Burrow then speaking to Mark Ansell there, the former teammate of Lance Armstrong in US Postal. Well, Burrow now works for Sheffield cycling company Planet X, as Mark mentioned. And he almost sounded sorry for Lance Armstrong there, suggesting he was scapegoated and when he won it was a level playing field as all the leading riders were doping at the time. Also, it was suggested that cancer sufferers are perhaps more ready to forgive his cheating. What do you make of it all? Send us a text at 81333, start your message with Sheffield. Jamie will take your messages on 0114 279 6699. You can, of course, get in touch via Twitter as well, at BBC Sheffield for those messages.
BBC Radio Sheffield.
I'm Susan, lived in Uxbridge for 40 years. Looking forward to the Tour de France visiting the area, and hopefully the legacy of the tour will encourage people to come and visit Uxbridge for many years to come.
The Tour de France in South Yorkshire, only on BBC Radio Sheffield.
Hi, I'm Alan. I live at Wancliffe side, so I'll be down at Uxbridge supporting any team that comes through, to be honest. It's going to be quite a spectacle.
South Yorkshire is ready. BBC Radio Sheffield is the place for all the colour and essential information, such as road closures ahead of the Tour de France. Join us live across the weekend.
Don't miss a moment with BBC Radio Sheffield.
In a moment, we're going to hear from Alex Gibney, the director of the film The Armstrong Lie. Mark Ansell with me in the studio, our Tour de France reporter on BBC Radio Sheffield. Mark, you've actually seen this film and you've interviewed the director, and the film was actually commissioned by Armstrong, wasn't it?
Yeah, the film was initially supposed to be called The Road Back and be all about Armstrong's successful comeback from retirement at the 2009 Tour de France. Armstrong commissioned Alex Gibney to make a behind-the-scenes film about him to dispel rumours that he cheated during his 7 Tour de France wins and to establish him as a sporting legend. But it didn't go to plan, as Armstrong's comeback ended with him 3rd on the podium in Paris and the film was put on ice. Now, as the years went by, more and more teammates and former colleagues spoke out to say Lance Armstrong was a cheat, and eventually, in August 2012, the US anti-doping agency found that he had been part of the most sophisticated, professionalised and successful doping programme that sport has ever seen, and he was stripped of all his 7 Tour de France titles. It led to Armstrong's confession of guilt in January last year. Now, this is the dramatic moment when Armstrong finally confessed to Oprah Winfrey on her TV channel.
Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Yes or no? Was one of those banned substances EPO?
Yes.
Did you ever blood dope or use blood transfusions to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Did you ever use any other banned substances like testosterone, cortisone, or human growth hormone?
Yes.
Yes or no, in all 7 of your Tour de France victories, did you ever take banned substances or blood dope?
Yes.
So that's a clip of Oprah Winfrey's interview with Lance Armstrong there. And following Armstrong's confession, the film director Alex Gibney demanded an interview with Armstrong, and he got it as well. He and Oprah are the only two people to have interviewed Armstrong following his confession. Look at me, using Oprah Winfrey on first name terms there. Gibney then re-edited the film to show how Armstrong had cheated. We'll hear from him in a moment. But first, here's the Armstrong Lie, the film trailer from Sony Pictures Classics.
I like to win. But more than anything, I can't stand the idea of losing because to me that equals death.
In 2009, I set out to make a film about Lance Armstrong's comeback year.
Lance, how are you feeling?
Nervous, but that's good.
I wasn't naive about past doping allegations.
Never tested positive.
They think he has.
He didn't.
But I couldn't help but root for the old pro.
If I win again, they're not gonna... They can't say that. They cannot.
Well, you can, but...
He had lied to me, straight to my face, all throughout 2009.
UCI will ban Lance Armstrong from cycling.
When the truth came out, I told him he owed me an explanation.
After the years and years of just the most amazing denials,
I can emphatically say I'm not on drugs.
He agreed to sit down one more time.
I certainly was very confident that I would never be caught.
The gift that he has is his gift as a storyteller.
A cancer survivor overcoming the disease comes back and wins.
Yeah, they liked that.
Even in 1999, steroids showed up in a urine test.
So the guy scoured the internet, and we found one that was indeed a cream.
Cream for what we call a saddle sore.
Such a huge number of people wanted to believe that they hated anyone who didn't believe.
I mean, I'm all for a clean game, but this is ridiculous.
He was an immensely intimidating person.
You are not worth the chair that you're sitting on.
If you crossed him, you were doomed.
There are people who have really been ruined.
Lance wanted to humiliate Frankie, and he wanted to get back at me.
From that point on, I was shunned, banned from everybody, and a lot of people, you know, would look at me, shake my hand.
That celebrity is what gave him such immense power.
Simply, you don't recall just
how many times I've said it.
This is not a story about doping. It's a story about power, and the story became hanging on to that power.
Let's get to the real nature and the real detail of the story. We haven't heard it yet, is the truth.
That's the trailer of the Armstrong Lie film. Mark, you've interviewed Alex Gibney, the director of that film. What did he have to say?
Well, you've got to remember that Alex Gibney knows Armstrong incredibly well. He's got his phone number on his phone. He spent the whole of the 2009 tour with him behind the scenes, and he feels completely duped by Armstrong. Gibney was at Sheffield Dockfest recently where his film was shown, and following the screening, he told me his film was originally supposed to be called The Road Back.
That's what the film was to have been about, to see whether the old man could come back and I think win again, and to see if he could put to rest all the questions in the past about doping. Obviously, he did just the opposite.
Do you think, had he not come back in 2009, that he wouldn't have been found out as a cheat?
I think that's absolutely 100% true. He never would have been found out if he hadn't come back in 2009. There wouldn't have been the momentum to go after him. I think it was almost his arrogance, his hubris. That's what makes this a kind of, makes it sort of Shakespearean or Greek in a way, but I don't think he ever would have been found out if he hadn't come back.
Because he'd won 7 Tour de France titles. He'd done it all. He didn't need to come back, but why do you think he wanted to?
That's the mystery that's at the heart of the film, to be honest. And I think there were a complex series of motivations, probably some conscious, some unconscious. Consciously, I think he wanted to come back, and, you know, athletes get bored when they're in retirement. And somebody like Lance in particular, you know, what he does, he fights, he competes, he beats people. That's what he likes to do. So he wanted to do it again. And I think he saw the tour, and he thought other people on the tour weren't as good as he was and they were winning. He could come back and beat them. I think he also felt he would put an end to questions about the past, because he would come back and he would say to everybody, I'm doing it clean and I'm still going to beat y'all. I think there may have been an unconscious desire to reckon with that past in a way. Maybe there was part of him that wanted to get caught. I don't think that was ever conscious. But I think, you know, because it was a very peculiar moment when I asked him, did you know that by coming back, you might put yourself at risk in terms of getting caught? And he didn't just say yes. He said, of course. So it's a very mysterious as to why he decided to cheat. And I think part of it also may have been that he had become so good at living the lie that he thought he could just perpetuate.
Because he didn't just lie. He actually, in the process of winning 7 Tour de France titles, he actually made the lives of the people who rode with him, people who worked for his team, his soigneurs. He made their lives a misery if they even hinted at the fact that he was guilty of doping, which of course he was.
Right, that's right. I think the Armstrong lie, it's really not so much about, it is about doping, but it's not so much about doping as the creation of this enormous lie. It was hiding in plain sight through the complicity of all sorts of people, whether it be sponsors, race organizers, other team members, etc. But he was particularly vicious in terms of going after people who tried to put the truth to the lie.
Bearing in mind the person you've described there, do you have any sympathy for him?
Sympathy is a difficult question. I see him as a human being. I think a lot of people want to create out of him a monster that's unique. And maybe the magnitude of his lie was unique because his story was so overwhelmingly unique. But I don't think he's a monster. I think he's a human being that succumbed to this desire to have it all. And to, he was a vicious competitor that from a very early age really saw only two possibilities, winning or losing. As he says in the film, win, lose, live, die, right? And so having spent some time with him, I see him as a human being rather than as a monster.
But do you think you feel deceived? Because you were commissioned by Sony to make this film at a time when there were serious questions being asked about the legitimacy of his tour-winning rides, in the sense that whether he was cheating or not. Do you feel duped by him?
Yes, but not in the way one would think. I didn't just fall off the turnip truck. When I started this film, I was well aware of allegations of past doping, and I concluded that he probably had doped in the past. What I really didn't reckon with was the idea that I was being used as a kind of cover story, that I was being brought in part to burnish his reputation. And by following him in the 2009 tour, where he was going to prove to everybody that he rode clean, it was in some larger way meant to further legitimate his past tour wins. So I was part of a cover-up or a con, and that's what I resented.
And the irony is that when he came back in 2009 to ride clean, in inverted commas, he came third on the podium in Paris, but that's actually been scratched out because it's believed that he cheated. He blood-doped, right?
It's it has been scratched out. I have to say, in terms of the scratch-outs, the first place in the 7 tours that he won and third place in the 2009 tour, they're now empty. As a historian, I don't like that. It's like Robespierre painting out people from the revolution just because he finds them inconvenient. A line through his name might have been more appropriate. That having been said, I believe he doped in 2009. He maintains unequivocally that he did not dope in 2009.
Yeah. You spent a huge amount of time with Lance Armstrong during the 2009 tour. You got access to him like no one else. Behind the scenes, you were there filming him in his room after he rode and all the rest of it. What's he like as a person?
And I have to say, the day-to-day, I liked him. He's a fun guy to hang out with. He's cocky, he's brash. He has a pretty good sense of humor. And even Betsy Andrea and Frankie Andrea will tell you that back in the day, before they felt betrayed by Lance, they used to have a gas with him.
This is the former teammate and teammate's wife who gave evidence against Lance Armstrong under oath.
That's right. And so on a day-to-day basis, I liked the man. And even after he had come clean about his doping, he and I would have conversations about his behavior in a way, that I think reckoned honestly. I don't think he's reckoned honestly with himself and his own behavior. I don't think he's gotten to that point, nearly to that point, that everybody was hoping for, including myself.
At the Oprah interview.
And beyond the Oprah interview. I think he hasn't come to a point where he's really reckoned with what he's done. And there's a moment in the film where he says at the end, which was in an interview I got just a half an hour after Oprah, I sat down with him in his house, and he said, are those, years from now, are those 7 tour title still going to be blank? And then he says, really, in truth, I won those Tour de France. Okay, that's his last word. It's the last word in the film. But in my view, it's a kind of a chilling moment, because I might agree with him that he won those tours. But what he doesn't see is the larger perspective. There's something much bigger going on, a much bigger cheat or deception. And that is the lie that he propagated for so many years, using cancer survivors in the service of that lie and then punishing people who tried to challenge that lie. That, to me, is bigger than the sport. It's bigger than cycling or doping.
This man had come back from suffering very severe cancer, cancer which was 50-50, if not worse, whether he'd survive or not, to come back to the sport to win 7 Tour de France titles. And he's seen as an idol to people who are coming back from cancer. Is that all gone now, do you think?
It's all gone now. And I think the only way back for him is to reckon honestly with what it is that he's done. And I don't think people have seen that. I don't think they've really seen an honest act of contrition from him. He said he's sorry, but I don't think, you know, he parses his words. And part of it, part of the problem is he's caught between two courts, the court of law and the court of public opinion. And the more honest he is in the court of public opinion, which is the only way that he'll find a way back, the more at risk he puts himself in the court of law. He's facing hundreds of millions. This is not an excuse. I believe that a courtroom is kind of like a morality play. And Lance is never going to come off well in that morality play so long as he's still holding on and not letting go. Lance hasn't come clean yet.
Do you think he will one day come clean?
I think that's the big question. And it's the question, and it's a mystery that's at the heart of the film. To protest that it would be impossible for him to dope because, after all, he was a cancer survivor and he was fighting for cancer survivors. That's where he crossed some fundamental moral line, where in order to traffic and profit on that kind of pain and suffering, I think he dug himself a very, very deep moral hole.
What's your relationship with Lance Armstrong like now? Do you have a relationship with him? Do you have his number on your phone there?
I do have his number, and I do have a relationship. I wouldn't say that we're, you know, weekly pen pals, but I was quite honest with Lance about my intentions. And even leading up to the final interview, which had to be agreed to by his lawyers, you know, I said, it's the lie that I object to. And I think in some way Lance felt that I was being straight with him. I wasn't pretending to be his friend in order to get an interview and then would, you know, use it in a way that would enhance my reputation and damage his.
In just a few days' time, 198 of the world's best riders will finish stage 2 of the Tour de France here in Sheffield. We're in the Winter Gardens here. It's not too far away where the finish line is outside Sheffield Arena. How many of them do you think are part of this lie, are still doping?
It's a much cleaner sport now. You know, a lot of people are raising questions about Chris Froome and the outsized nature of his performances. Has he been proven to be doped? No. But the questions still arise. How can you not raise those questions after all these years? So I think the sport is cleaner, but I don't think it's clean.
Rich says, I urge you to read Ty Hamilton's book, Robin. That was a brilliant interview earlier with Jamie Burrow. John in Wombwell says, why has Armstrong been so heavily criticised, whilst Pantani still remains a hero to many? Thanks for the show tonight. And Stewie rang in to say that all these squeaky clean riders that criticised Lance Armstrong would probably fail a lie detector test if they were asked if they took drugs. If you want to get in touch, feel free between now and 7 o'clock on BBC Radio Sheffield. Next on this Cycle Heaven show, though, on the downfall of Lance Armstrong, we hear from the Sunday Times journalist who exposed the American as a serial cheat. Armstrong called David Walsh a little troll and sued him when he tried to prove he was a doper. Walsh showed Armstrong was a cheat back in 2001, and after a 2-year investigation, this was 11 years before Armstrong was revealed to be a serial drug cheat and banned for life from competition. David Walsh has been explaining to Mark Ansell how Armstrong managed to keep the lie a secret for so long.
He got away with it because it suited people to have an American who had recovered from life-threatening cancer winning the Tour de France. When I say it suited him, I mean commercially. I mean, the guy was good for the sport in the sense that he brought in sponsors, he brought kind of great publicity, television. He was like Tiger Woods on a bike in terms of when he was in the race, more people watched. So the UCI, who ran cycling, had a vested interest in Lance being a champion. The sponsors loved him. The race organisers loved him.
Do you think it's part of human nature too? Everyone wants to believe that this man has come back from cancer to win the Tour de France 7 times. It was too good to be true, though, wasn't it?
Yes, it was too good to be true, but yes, it is part of human nature. We all want a life-affirming story, and this was a life-affirming story. And in a way, you would have some sympathy for Lance Armstrong in this, because he became a prisoner of his own story. The story was so good that people kept asking him to retell it. The more he won the Tour de France, the greater the lie became, but the more enslaved to it he was. He couldn't say, actually, it's been a lie.
How did it feel for you to be a pariah? Most of the other journalists believed the lie. They were duped by Lance Armstrong, but you stood firm and you carried on challenging him, despite the fact that you were being not only sued, but you were being attacked by him and his supporters.
Yeah, I kind of took a macabre pleasure in it, in a way. It didn't bother me, if I'm being really honest. There's a line from Marge Simpson that is close to my heart. You know, Marge Simpson once said, you know, there's no shame in being a pariah. And in a way, I felt there was no shame in being a pariah on this story. I knew I was a bit of a pariah. I mean, I ended up being, you know, kind of kicked out of a journalist's car in before the start of the 2004 tour, because the guys didn't feel they could travel with me and have any access to Lance Armstrong. In other words, if they were associated with me, they too were going to be blacklisted. So they removed me from the car. My standpoint made people feel uncomfortable. And when people feel uncomfortable or threatened, they kind of defend themselves almost. So the defence was to cast me as the black sheep in the press room.
Do you feel at all smug now, though, among the journalism pack that covers cycling, that you were right and they were duped?
You know, I definitely wouldn't want to feel smug about it, because the story doesn't end in a way, because I've come along since then and I've travelled with Team Sky, and I believe that Bradley Wiggins won the Tour clean. I believe Chris Froome won the Tour clean. I've been vilified for that, in many ways as much as I was vilified for saying I think Armstrong was a cheat. But that doesn't bother me. It didn't bother me when people said you're wrong about Armstrong. It doesn't bother me too much when people say you're wrong about Froome.
Do you think people in the Twitter sphere, online, on social media, think that Froome and Wiggins and the like are cheating because they were so upset by what Lance Armstrong did in cheating them?
Yes, absolutely. I think that is it's a kind of a natural response. But for me, if you surrender to that kind of urge to doubt everybody now and give nobody any kind of benefit of doubt, Lance wins twice. You know, he won when he duped us, and now he wins when he stops people from believing in people who may well be clean.
You've been embedded with the Sky team. That's what your latest book's about. And you believe that Team Sky is clean. How clean is cycling, though, now? How clean will this Tour de France be starting in Yorkshire?
I think it's much cleaner. You would never say it's clean, because that sounds like an absolute. There will be some riders probably who are still doping, but I don't think doping has nearly the impact it once had. I think the vast majority of riders in the Tour de France will be riding clean. I think the sport has in many ways is setting standards that other sports could really do well to follow. I mean, I would say cycling now is way ahead of football in relation to its anti-doping, way ahead of rugby, way ahead of most sports. Athletics is making a reasonable effort, but cycling has become the leader in the anti-doping movement, from my point of view.
Earlier in the programme, we heard from Jamie Burrow. He rode with Lance Armstrong as a teammate, and he has told us, he works for Sheffield-based Planet X now, he has told us that he thinks back when Lance was cheating, he was on a level playing field because all of the top riders doped.
No, I don't buy that at all, because the level playing field is a sickening argument for me, because it completely ignores people like Christophe Basson, who we know rode clean. So what does Jamie say about Christophe Basson? He doesn't count. Why should he not count? He was a pro. Physiologically, he had better capacities than Lance Armstrong. He never doped, so he never got into that front line. So does that mean that he doesn't deserve to be considered? There are tons of people who never got the chance to compete in that front line because they wouldn't dope. So it was never a level playing field. It was only a level playing field for a small elite group of cheats. It's an intellectually dull thing to say that it was a level playing field, because it ignores all the clean people who were prevented prevented from competing because they had morals and they had ethics.
What do you think of Lance Armstrong now that he has, at least to some extent, confessed? And what do you think he thinks of you?
The easy part of that question is what he thinks of me. I think he still regards me as the problem. He still regards me as the bad guy who went after him. He said to in his Oprah Winfrey interview that he would apologise to me. I didn't expect he ever would. I was never wanting to, and of course he hasn't. What do I think of him now? I think Lance is a guy who struggles with the sense of being irrelevant. And I think because of his elimination from the world of sport, because of his fall from the pinnacle of seven-time Tour de France winner to nothing, I think he's struggling with that. And he's trying to find a way to become relevant again. But I think it's going to take time. And at the moment, you know, it's not happening for him. People don't want to know.
That's the Sunday Times journalist David Walsh there, contradicting comments from Jamie Burrow about the fact that it was a level playing field. Very interesting to hear from David Walsh, and I wonder what his reaction would be to the news of Daryl Impey today. Now to one of the biggest names in cycling next on Cycle Heaven on BBC Radio Sheffield, three-time winner of the Tour de France, Greg LeMond. Mark, where does LeMond fit in this whole Lance Armstrong story?
Well, when fellow American Lance Armstrong first competed in the Tour de France, he was an also-ran. LeMond started to get suspicious when, after coming back from cancer, Armstrong somehow won tour after tour from 1999. Now, after learning Armstrong was working with the doping doctor Michele Ferrari, LeMond famously said, "If Lance is clean, it is the greatest comeback in the history of sport. If he isn't, it would be the greatest fraud." Now, Armstrong took great offence to this and knowingly and wrongly told the world's press that LeMond was a drug addict and an alcoholic, and got LeMond's cycling business shut down. The cycling world shunned LeMond. He was a pariah. Now, Greg LeMond has been in Yorkshire this week, and I went to speak to him while strolling around Sheffield about what his experience with Lance Armstrong was like.
He's a person apart from anybody. I've never seen anything like it. 10 years that our family's been under attack by his sponsors, by the company that actually I had a partnership with for my bikes. You know, he worked with very powerful people, and they did everything they could to destroy anybody. But me in particular, there was a little black book that Mike Anderson, who worked for him, said he had. And, you know, number four of his most hated persons was my wife. Number three was his mother-in-law, Kristen's mom. And number two was Betsy, and number one was me. So I think when you run into somebody like that, you got to turn around and run the other way.
He hated you because you dared to question him.
I think it goes deeper than that, because somehow it goes deeper than that. There's something I think that I first met him when he was 18, but there's, you know, they started comparing him to me. But I think the reality is he knew, I've actually won the Tour de France. I know what it takes. And so he tried to befriend me in 98. You know, he had me over to his mother and father-in-law's house. And I say that was the first time I heard him say he's going to win the Tour de France. And I actually thought this poor guy is somewhat delusional. But it's good he has that spirit. But he was really, he's a very manipulative person. And he was really trying to kind of, if you can befriend me, I'd be biased. So it's very hard to kind of go, you know, objectively what's going on. But it was 2001. It was all these little stories I heard that were pretty significant. I mean, I heard about bribes, backdated, but from somebody within the team. So it wasn't rumors. It was somebody that really worked in the team. That was 2000. So, but still, there was not really the link to Armstrong to Ferrari was significant. Because
the doctor, Dr. Ferrari, the
David
Italian
Walsh,
doctor,
uncovered. But you could talk to Tyler Hamilton or Floyd Landis, and they too have suffered.
Yeah, the two riders who
psychologically depressed. Many riders, you know, what happens in sport when you get people like Ferrari and these guys? They're almost like athletes are still young guys. I mean, they're 19, 20. They think they're all mature, but they're still young, easily influenced, and but. They don't start off a cycling career to do that. They all start off with the spirit of competition sport, and it actually kills their soul. And so some of these riders, yes, they might be cheating, but it's not. There are some riders that do anything to do, you know, win, but there's a lot of fallout from other, I mean, a lot of these riders that have been doping that they look at their careers as also fraud. It wasn't really them. So you get both sides. Some people are, both sides are hurt. But I think the sports, because of it, I think it took Armstrong to come down. You know, I knew that. I knew that the only way that I would ever have any part to be back in cycling was when he was gone, because it was, for him, it was either me or him. That went all the way to the Tour de France, influencing, you know, my ability to really participate in any external way. TV, he got that shut down, so yeah. But I'm here because it has been a long time that I haven't been back to cycling. There is no doubt that's made a huge difference. And I'm tiptoeing back into it. I know that no sport's ever perfect. I do believe that cycling, when I read about FIFA and football in the World Cup, and that cycling might very well be the cleanest sport in terms of out there. Yes, there's doping, but it is on the forefront of testing. It just needs to eliminate, and I believe it has made a big step in eliminating some of the corruption that's allowed stuff to go on.
So you think it's a cleaner sport now than it was?
Absolutely. And I think what's fascinating, science, people believe that the doper's always ahead of science, and it's not true. It's not going to be true. There's a University of Texas, and I think it's in Austin, believe it or not, home of Lance Armstrong. They've developed a test that will be able to test any molecule, any drug you've taken for 4 years. I want to see a victory in the Tour de France that I don't have to even question.
Well, following the Armstrong revelations, it's great to have you, Greg LeMond, back in cycling, back in the community, proven right. And I never thought I'd see the day where I was walking alongside Greg LeMond, three times winning the Tour de France, the only American winner of that race, and walking around my home city of Sheffield. So thanks very much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
It's a beautiful town. I'm going to ride the last part of the stage tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to it.
Mark Ansell speaking to Greg LeMond there. That is the story of the greatest fraud in sporting history, the story of Lance Armstrong's downfall on BBC Radio Sheffield. On tomorrow night, Cycle Heaven, a special programme live from the Tour de France team presentation at Leeds Arena. All 198 riders will be unveiled to the world. That's 6 until 9 tomorrow on Cycle Heaven on BBC Radio Sheffield.
Loving South Yorkshire and North Derbyshire.